and 3 a.m.? His brows shot up. If it hadn't just occurred to him that he could be considered a suspect, he was an excellent actor. Then again, Eve thought, people in his line of work had to be. I was with a client, here. She stayed overnight. Is that usual? This client prefers that arrangement. Lieutenant, I'll give you her name if absolutely necessary, but I'd prefer not to. At least until I've explained the circumstances to her. It's murder, Mr. Monroe, so it's necessary. What time did you bring your client here? About 10. We had dinner at Miranda's, the Sky Cafe above 6th. 10. Eve nodded, and saw the moment he remembered. The security camera in the elevator. His smile was all charm again. It's an antiquated law. I suppose you could bust me, but it's hardly worth your time. Any sexual act in a secured area is a misdemeanor, Mr. Monroe. Charles, please. It's a nitpick, Charles, but they could suspend your license for 6 months. Give me her name and we'll clear it up as quietly as possible. You're going to lose me one of my best clients, he muttered. Darlene Howe, I'll get you the address. He rose to get his electronic datebook, then read off the information. Thanks. Did Sharon talk about her clients with you? We were friends, he said wearily. Yeah, we talked shop, though it's not strictly ethical. She had some funny stories. I'm more conventional in style. Sharon was open to the unusual. Sometimes we'd get together for a drink and she'd talk. No names. She had her own little terms for them. The emperor, the weasel, the milkmaid, that kind of thing. Was there anyone she mentioned who worried her, made her uneasy? Someone who might have been violent? She didn't mind violence. And no, nobody worried her. One thing about Sharon, she always felt in control. That's the way she wanted it, because she said she'd been under someone else's control most of her life. She had a lot of bitterness toward her family. She told me once she'd never planned on making a career out of professional sex. She'd only gotten into it to make her family crazy. But then, after she got into it, she decided she liked it. He moved his shoulders again, sipped from his glass. So she stayed in the life and killed two birds with one fuck. Her phrase. He lifted his eyes again. Looks like one of the fucks killed her. Yeah. Eve rose, tucked a recorder away. Don't take any out-of-town trips, Charles. I'll be in touch. That's it? For the moment. He stood as well, smiled again. You're easy to talk to for a cop. Eve? Experimentally, he skimmed a fingertip down her arm. When her brows lifted, he took the fingertip over her jawline. In a hurry? Why? Well, I've got a couple of hours, and you're very attractive. Big golden eyes, he murmured. This little dip, right in your chin. Why don't we both go off the clock for a while? She waited while he lowered his head, while his lips hovered just above hers. Is this a bribe, Charles? Because if it is, and you're half as good as I think you are, I'm better. He nibbled at her bottom lip, let his hand slide down to toy with her breast. I'm much better. In that case, I'd have to charge you with a felony. She smiled as he jerked back. And that would make both of us really sad. Amused, she patted his cheek. But thanks for the thought. He scratched his chin as he followed her to the door. Eve! She paused, hand on the knob, and glanced back at him. Yes? Bribes aside, if you change your mind, I'd be interested in seeing more of you. I'll let you know. She closed the door and headed for the elevator. It wouldn't have been difficult, she mused, for Charles Monroe to slip out of his apartment, leaving his client sleeping, and slip into Sharon's. A little sex, a little murder. Thoughtful, she stepped into the elevator. Doctor the disks. As a resident of the building, it would have been simple for him to gain access to security. Then he could have popped back into bed with his client. It was too bad that the scenario was plausible, Eve thought as she reached the lobby. She liked him. But until she checked his alibi thoroughly, Charles Monroe was now at the top of her short list. Chapter 3. Eve hated funerals. She detested the rite human beings insisted on giving death. The flowers, the music, the endless words and weeping. There might be a god. She hadn't completely ruled such things out, and if there were, she thought, it must have enjoyed a good laugh over its creation's useless rituals and passages. Still, she had made the trip to Virginia to attend Sharon de Blas's funeral. She wanted to see the dead's family and friends gathered together, to observe and analyze and judge. The senator stood grim-faced and dry-eyed, with Rockman, his shadow, one pew behind. Beside de Blas was his son and daughter-in-law. Sharon's parents were young, attractive, successful attorneys who headed their own law firm. Richard de Blas stood with his head bowed and his eyes hooded, a trimmer and somehow less dynamic version of his father. Was it coincidence, Eve wondered, or design that he stood at equal distance between his wife and father? Elizabeth Barrister was sleek and chic in her dark suit, her waving mahogany hair glossy, her posture rigid. And, Eve noted, her eyes red-rimmed and swimming with constant tears. What did a mother feel, Eve wondered, as she had wondered all her life, when she lost a child? Senator de Blas had a daughter as well, and she flanked his right side. Congresswoman Catherine de Blas had followed in her father's political footsteps. Painfully thin, she stood militarily straight, her arms looking like brittle twigs in her black dress. Beside her, her husband, Justin Summit, stared at the glossy coffin draped with roses at the front of the church. At his side, their son Franklin, still trapped in the gangly stage of adolescence, shifted restlessly. At the end of the pew, somehow separate from the rest of the family, was de Blas's wife, Anna. She neither shifted nor wept. Not once did Eve see her so much as glance at the flower-strewn box that held what was left of her only granddaughter. There were others, of course. Elizabeth's parents stood together, hands linked, and cried openly. Cousins, acquaintances, and friends dabbed at their eyes or simply looked around in fascination or horror. The president had sent an envoy, and the church was packed with more politicians than the Senate lunchroom. Though there were more than 100 faces, Eve had no trouble picking Rourke out of the crowd. He was alone. There were others lined in the pew with him, but Eve recognized the solitary quality that surrounded him. There could have been 10,000 in the building, and he would have remained aloof from them. His striking face gave away nothing. No guilt, no grief, no interest. He might have been watching a mildly inferior play. Eve could think of no better description for a funeral. More than one head turned in his direction for a quick study, or, in the case of a shapely brunette, a not-so-subtle flirtation. Rourke responded to both the same way. He ignored them. At first study, she would have judged him as cold, an icy fortress of a man who guarded himself against any and all. But there must have been heat. It took more than discipline and intelligence to rise so high so young. It took ambition, and to Eve's mind, ambition was a flammable fuel. He looked straight ahead as the dirge swelled. Then, without warning, he turned his head, looked five pews back across the aisle and directly into Eve's eyes. It was surprise that had her fighting not to jolt at that sudden and unexpected punch of power. It was will that kept her from blinking or shifting her gaze. For one humming minute, they stared at each other. Then there was movement, and mourners came between them as they left the church. When Eve stepped into the aisle to search him out again, he was gone. She joined the long line of cars and limos on the journey to the cemetery. Above, the hearse and the family vehicles flew solemnly. Only the very rich could afford body interment. Only the obsessively traditional still put their dead into the ground. Frowning, her fingers tapping the wheel, she relayed her observations into her recorder. When she got to Rourke, she hesitated, and her frown deepened. Why would he trouble himself to attend the funeral of such a casual acquaintance? She murmured into the recorder in her pocket. According to data, they had met only recently, and a single date. Behavior seems inconsistent and questionable. She shivered once, glad she was alone as she drove through the arching gates of the cemetery. As far as Eve was concerned, there should be a law against putting someone in a hole. More words and weeping, more flowers. The sun was bright as a sword, but the air had the snapping bite of a petulant child. Near the gravesite, she slipped her hands into her pockets. She'd forgotten her gloves again. The long, dark coat she wore was borrowed. Beneath it, the single gray suit she owned had a loose button that seemed to beg her to tug at it. Inside her thin leather boots, her toes were tiny blocks of ice. The discomfort helped distract her from the misery of headstones and the smell of cold, fresh earth. She bided her time, waiting until the last mournful word about everlasting life echoed away, then approached the senator. "My sympathies, Senator de Blas, to you and your family." His eyes were hard, sharp, and black, like the hued edge of a stone. "Save your sympathies, Lieutenant. I want justice." "So do I." "Mrs. de Blas?" Eve held out a hand to the senator's wife and found her fingers clutching a bundle of brittle twigs. "Thank you for coming." Eve nodded. One close look had shown her Anna de Blas was skimming under the edge of emotion on a buffering layer of chemicals. Her eyes passed over Eve's face and settled just above her shoulder as she withdrew her hand. "Thank you for coming," she said in exactly the same flat tone to the next offer of condolence. Before Eve could speak again, her arm was taken in a firm grip. Rockman smiled solemnly down at her. "Lieutenant Dallas, the senator and his family appreciate the compassion and interest you've shown in attending the service." In his quiet manner, he edged her away. "I'm sure you'll understand that, under the circumstances, it would be difficult for Sharon's parents to meet the officer in charge of their daughter's investigation over her grave." Eve allowed him to lead her 5 feet away before she jerked her arm free. "You're in the right business, Rockman. That's a very delicate and diplomatic way of telling me to get my ass out." "Not at all." He continued to smile, smoothly polite. "There's simply a time and place. You have our complete cooperation, Lieutenant. If you wish to interview the senator's family, I'd be more than happy to arrange it." "I'll arrange my own interviews at my own time and place." Because his placid smile irked her, she decided to see if she could wipe it off his face. "What about you, Rockman? Got an alibi for the night in question?" The smile did falter. That was some satisfaction. He recovered quickly, however. "I dislike the word alibi." "Me too," she returned with a smile of her own. "That's why I like nothing better than to break them." "You didn't answer the question, Rockman." "I was in East Washington on the night Sharon was murdered. The senator and I worked quite late refining a bill he intends to present next month." "It's a quick trip from EW to New York," she commented. "It is. However, I didn't make it on that particular night. We worked until nearly midnight. Then I retired to the senator's guest room. We had breakfast together at 7 the next morning. As Sharon, according to your own reports, was killed at 2, it gives me a very narrow window of opportunity." "Narrow windows still provide access." But she said it only to irritate him as she turned away. She'd held back the information on the doctored security disks from the file she'd given to Blass. The murderer had been in the Gorham by midnight. Rockman would hardly use the victim's grandfather for an alibi unless it was solid. Rockman's working in East Washington at midnight slammed even that narrow window closed. She saw Rourke again, and watched with interest as Elizabeth Barrister clung to him as he bent his head and murmured to her. "Not the usual offer and acceptance of sympathy from strangers," Eve mused. Her brow lifted as Rourke laid a hand on Elizabeth's right cheek, kissed her left before stepping back to speak quietly to Richard de Blas. He crossed to the senator, but there was no contact between them, and the conversation was brief. Alone, as Eve had suspected, Rourke began to walk across the winter grass, between the cold monuments the living raised for the dead. "Rourke!" He stopped, and as he had at the service, turned and met her eyes. She thought she caught a flash of something in them. Anger, sorrow, impatience. Then it was gone, and they were simply cool, blue, and unfathomable. She didn't hurry as she walked to him. Something told her he was a man too used to people, women certainly, rushing toward him. So she took her time, her long, slow strides flapping her borrowed coat around her chilly legs. "I'd like to speak with you," she said when she faced him. She took out her badge, watched him give it a brief glance before lifting his eyes back to hers. "I'm investigating Sharon de Blas's murder. Do you make a habit of attending the funerals of murder victims, Lieutenant Dallas?" His voice was smooth, with a whisper of the charm of Ireland over it, like rich cream over warmed whiskey. "Do you make a habit of attending the funerals of women you barely know, Rourke?" "I'm a friend of the family," he said simply. "You're freezing, Lieutenant." She plunged her icy fingers into the pockets of the coat. "How well do you know the victim's family?" "Well enough." He tilted his head. In a minute, he thought, her teeth would shatter. The nasty little wind was blowing her poorly cut hair around a very interesting face. Intelligent, stubborn, sexy. Three very good reasons in his mind to take a second look at a woman. "Wouldn't it be more convenient to talk someplace warmer?" "I've been unable to reach you," she began. "I've been traveling. You've reached me now. I assume you're returning to New York today." "Yes. I have a few minutes before I have to leave for the shuttle, so we'll go back together. That should give you time enough to grill me." "Question you," she said between her teeth, annoyed that he turned and walked away from her. She lengthened her stride to catch up. "A few simple answers now, Rourke, and we can arrange a more formal interview in New York." "I hate to waste time," he said easily. "You strike me as someone who feels the same. Did you rent a car?"
"Yes."
"I'll arrange to have it returned." He held out a hand, waiting for the key card. "That isn't necessary. It's simpler. I appreciate complications, Lieutenant, and I appreciate simplicity. You and I are going to the same destination at the same approximate time. You want to talk to me, and I'm willing to oblige." He stopped by a black limo where a uniformed driver waited, holding the rear door open. "My transport's routed for New York. You can, of course, follow me to the airport, take public transportation, then call my office for an appointment. Or you can drive with me, enjoy the privacy of my jet, and have my full attention during the trip." She hesitated only a moment, then took the key card for the rental from her pocket and dropped it into his hand. Smiling, he gestured her into the limo, where she settled as he instructed his driver to deal with the rental car. "Now then." Rourke slid in beside her, reached for a decanter. "Would you like a brandy to fight off the chill?"
"No."
She felt the warmth of the car sweep up from her feet and was afraid she'd begin to shiver in reaction. "Ah, on duty. Coffee, perhaps?"
"Great."
Gold winked at his wrist as he pressed his choice for two coffees on the auto chef built into the side panel. "Cream? Black. A woman after my own heart." Moments later, he opened the protective door and offered her a china cup in a delicate saucer. "We have more of a selection on the plane," he said, then settled back with his coffee.
"I bet."
The steam rising from her cup smelled like heaven. Eve took a tentative sip and nearly moaned. It was real. No simulation made from vegetable concentrate so usual since the depletion of the rainforests in the late 20th. This was the real thing, ground from rich Colombian beans, singing with caffeine. She sipped again and could have wept.
Problem? He enjoyed her reaction immensely. The flutter of the lashes, the faint flush, the darkening of the eyes, a similar response, he noted, to a woman purring under a man's hands. Do you know how long it's been since I had real coffee? He smiled. No. Neither do I. Unashamed, she closed her eyes as she lifted the cup again. You'll have to excuse me. This is a private moment. We'll talk on the plane.
As you like.
He gave himself the pleasure of watching her as the car traveled smoothly over the road. Odd, he thought. He hadn't pegged her for a cop. His instincts were usually keen about such matters. At the funeral, he'd been thinking only what a terrible waste it was for someone as young, foolish, and full of life as Sharon to be dead. Then he'd sensed something. Something that had coiled his muscles, tightened his gut. He'd felt her gaze, as physical as a blow. When he'd turned, when he'd seen her, another blow. A slow-motion 1-2 punch he hadn't been able to evade. It was fascinating. But the warning blip hadn't gone off. Not the warning blip that should have relayed cop. He'd seen a tall, willowy brunette with short, tumbled hair, eyes the color of honeycombs, and a mouth made for sex. If she hadn't sought him out, he'd intended to seek her. Too damn bad she was a cop. She didn't speak again until they were at the airport, stepping into the cabin of his Jetstar 6000. She hated being impressed, again. Coffee was one thing, and a small weakness was permitted. But she didn't care for her goggle-eyed reaction to the lush cabin with its deep chairs, sofas, the antique carpet, and crystal vases filled with flowers. There was a viewing screen recessed in the forward wall, and a uniformed flight attendant who showed no surprise at seeing Rourke board with a strange woman.
Brandy, sir?
My companion prefers coffee, Diana. Black. He lifted a brow until Eve nodded. I'll have brandy. I've heard about the Jetstar. Eve shrugged out of her coat, and it was whisked away along with Rourke's by the attendant. It's a nice form of transportation.
Thanks.
We spent 2 years designing it.
Rourke Industries, she said as she took a chair.
That's right. I prefer using my own whenever possible. You'll need to strap in for takeoff, he told her, then leaned forward to flip on an intercom.
Ready.
We've been cleared, they were told. 30 seconds. Almost before Eve could blink, they were airborne, in so smooth a transition she barely felt the G's. It beat the hell, she thought, out of the commercial flights that slapped you back in your seat for the first 5 minutes of airtime. They were served drinks and a little plate of fruit and cheese that had Eve's mouth watering. It was time, she decided, to get to work.
How long did you know Sharon de Blas?
I met her recently, at the home of a mutual acquaintance.
You said you were a friend of the family.
Of her parents, Rourke said easily. I've known Beth and Richard for several years, first on a business level, then on a personal one. Sharon was in school, then in Europe, and our paths didn't cross. I met her for the first time a few days ago, took her to dinner. Then she was dead. He took a flat gold case from his inside pocket. Eve's eyes narrowed as she watched him light a cigarette.
Tobacco's illegal, Rourke. Not in free airspace, international waters, or on private property.
He smiled at her through a haze of smoke.
Don't you think, Lieutenant, that the police have enough to do without trying to legislate our morality and personal lifestyles?
She hated to admit, even to herself, that the tobacco smelled enticing.
Is that why you collect guns, as part of your personal lifestyle?
I find them fascinating.
Your grandfather and mine considered owning one a constitutional right. We've toyed quite a bit with constitutional rights as we've civilized ourselves. And murder and injury by that particular type of weapon is now an aberration rather than the norm.
You like rules, Lieutenant?
The question was mild, as was the insult under it. Her shoulders stiffened. Without rules, chaos.
With chaos, Life? Screw philosophy, she thought, annoyed. Do you own a 38 caliber Smith & Wesson, Model 10, circa 1990? He took another slow, considering drag. The tobacco burned expensively between his long, elegant fingers. I believe I own one of that model. Is that what killed her? Would you be willing to show it to me? Of course, at your convenience. Too easy, she thought. She suspected anything that came easily. You had dinner with the deceased the night before her death, in Mexico. That's right. Rourke crushed out his cigarette and settled back with his brandy. I have a small villa on the west coast. I thought she'd enjoy it. She did. Did you have a physical relationship with Sharon de Blas? His eyes glittered for a moment, but whether with amusement or with anger, she couldn't be sure. By that I take you to mean, did I have sex with her? No, Lieutenant, though it hardly seems relevant. We had dinner. You took a beautiful woman, a professional companion, to your villa in Mexico, and all you shared with her was dinner. He took his time choosing a glossy green grape. I appreciate beautiful women for a variety of reasons, and enjoy spending time with them. I don't employ professionals for two reasons. First, I don't find it necessary to pay for sex. He sipped his brandy, watching her over the rim. And second, I don't choose to share. He paused very briefly. Do you? Her stomach fluttered, was ignored. We're not talking about me. I was. You're a beautiful woman. And we're quite alone, at least for the next 15 minutes, yet all we've shared has been coffee and brandy. He smiled at the temper smoldering in her eyes. Heroic, isn't it, what restraint I have? I'd say your relationship with Sharon de Blas had a different flavor. Oh, I certainly agree. He chose another grape, offered it. Appetite was a weakness, Eve reminded herself, even as she accepted the grape and bit through its thin, tart skin. Did you see her? After your dinner in Mexico? No. I dropped her off about 3 a.m. and went home. Alone. Can you tell me your whereabouts for the next 48 hours after you went home? Alone? I was in bed for the first 5 of them. I took a conference call over breakfast about 8:15. You can check the records. I will. This time he grinned, a quick flash of undiluted charm that had her pulse skipping. I have no doubt of it. You fascinate me, Lieutenant Dallas. After the conference call? It ended about 9. I worked out until 10, spent the next several hours in my midtown office with various appointments. He took out a small, slim card that she recognized as a daybook. Shall I list them for you? I'd prefer you to arrange to have a hard copy sent to my office. I'll see to it. I was back home by 7. I had a dinner meeting with several members of my Japanese manufacturing firm in my home. We dined at 8. Shall I send you the menu? Don't be snide, Rourke. Merely thorough, Lieutenant. It was an early evening. By 11 I was alone with a book and a brandy until about 7 a.m. when I had my first cup of coffee. Would you like another? She'd have killed for another cup of coffee, but she shook her head. Alone for 8 hours, Rourke. Did you speak with anyone, see anyone during that time? No, no one. I had to be in Paris the next day and wanted a quiet evening. Poor timing on my part. Then again, if I were going to murder someone, it would have been ill-advised not to protect myself with an alibi. Or arrogant not to bother, she returned. Do you just collect antique weapons, Rourke, or do you use them? I'm an excellent shot. He set his empty snifter aside. I'll be happy to demonstrate for you when you come to see my collection. Does tomorrow suit you? Fine. 7 o'clock? I assume you have the address. When he leaned over, she stiffened and nearly hissed as his hand brushed her arm. He only smiled, his face close, his eyes level. You need to strap in, he said quietly. We'll be landing in a moment. He fastened her harness himself, wondering if he made her nervous as a man or a murder suspect, or a combination of both. Just then, any choice had its own interest and its own possibilities. Eve, he murmured. Such a simple and feminine name. I wonder if it suits you. She said nothing while the flight attendant came in to remove the dishes. Have you ever been in Sharon de Blas's apartment? A tough shell, he mused, but he was certain there would be something soft and hot beneath. He wondered if, no, when, he'd have the opportunity to uncover it. Not while she was a tenant, Rourke said as he sat back again. And not at all that I recall, though it's certainly possible. He smiled again and fastened his own harness. I own the Gorham complex, as I'm sure you already know. Idly, he glanced out the window as Earth hurtled toward them. Do you have transportation at the airport, Lieutenant? Or can I give you a lift? Chapter 4 Eve was more than tired by the time she filed her report for Whitney and returned home. She was pissed. She'd wanted, badly, to zing Rourke with the fact that she knew he owned the Gorham. His telling her in the same carelessly polite tone he used to offer her coffee had ended their first interview with him 1 point up. She didn't like the score. It was time to even things up. Alone in her living room, and technically off the clock, she sat down in front of her computer. Engage, Dallas. Code 5 access. ID 53478Q. Open file de Blas. Voice print and ID recognized, Dallas. Proceed. Open subfile Rourke. Suspect Rourke, known to victim. According to source C, Sebastian, victim desired suspect. Suspect met her requirements for sexual partner. Possibility of emotional involvement, high. Opportunity to commit crime. Suspect owns victim's apartment building, equaling easy access and probably knowledge of security of murder scene. Suspect has no alibi for 8-hour period on the night of the murder, which includes the time span erased from security disks. Suspect owns large collection of antique weapons, including the type used on victim. Suspect admits to being expert marksman. Factor in personality of suspect. Aloof, confident, self-indulgent, highly intelligent. Interesting balance between aggressive and charming. Motive. And there she ran into trouble. Calculating, she rose, did a pass through the room while the computer waited for more data. Why would a man like Rourke kill? For gain? In passion? She didn't think so. Wealth and status he would and could gain by other means. Women, for sex and otherwise, certainly he could win without breaking a sweat. She suspected he was capable of violence and that he could execute it coldly. Sharon de Blas's murder had been charged with sex. There had been a crudeness overlaying it. Eve couldn't quite reconcile that with the elegant man she'd shared coffee with. Perhaps that was the point. Suspect considers morality a personal rather than legislative area, she continued, pacing still. Sex, weapon restriction, drug, tobacco, and alcohol restrictions, and murder deal with morality that has been outlawed or regulated. The murder of a licensed companion, the only daughter of friends, the only granddaughter of one of the country's most outspoken and conservative legislators by a banned weapon. Was this an illustration of the flaws the suspect considers are inherent in the legal system? Motive, she concluded, settling again. Self-indulgence. She took a deep, satisfied breath. Compute probability. Her system whined, reminded her it was one more piece of hardware that needed replacement, then settled into a jerky hum. Probability Rourke perpetrator given current data and supposition, 82.6%. Oh, it was possible, Eve thought, leaning back in her chair. There was a time, in the not-so-distant past, when a child could be gunned down by another child for the shoes on his feet. What was that, if not obscene self-indulgence? He had the opportunity. He had the means. And if his own arrogance could be taken into account, he had the motive. So why, Eve thought, as she watched her own words blink on the monitor, as she studied her computer's impersonal analysis, couldn't she make it play in her own head? She just couldn't see it, she admitted. She just couldn't visualize Rourke standing behind the camera, aiming the gun at the defenseless, naked, smiling woman, and pumping steel into her, perhaps only moments after he'd pumped his seed into her. Still, certain facts couldn't be overlooked. If she could gather enough of them, she could issue a warrant for a psychiatric evaluation. Wouldn't that be interesting? She thought with a half-smile. Traveling into Rourke's head would be a fascinating journey. She'd take the next step at 7 the following evening. The buzz at her door brought a frown of annoyance to her eyes. Save and lock on voice print, Dallas. Code 5, disengage. The monitor blipped off as she rose to see who was interrupting her. A glance at her security screen wiped the frown away. Hey, Mavis! You forgot, didn't you? Mavis Freestone whirled in. A jangle of bracelets, a puff of scent. Her hair was a glittery silver tonight, a shade that would change with her next mood. She flipped it back where it sparkled like stars down to her impossibly tiny waist. No, I didn't. Eve shut the door, re-engaged the locks. Forgot what? Dinner, dancing, debauchery. With a heavy sigh, Mavis dropped her slinkily attired 98 pounds onto the sofa where she could eye Eve's simple gray suit with disdain. You can't be going out in that. Feeling drab, as she often did within 20 feet of Mavis's outrageous color, Eve looked down at her suit. No, I guess not. So? Mavis gestured with one emerald-tipped finger. You forgot. She had, but she was remembering now. They had made plans to check out the new club Mavis had discovered at the space docks in Jersey. According to Mavis, the space jocks were perennially horny, something to do with extended weightlessness. Sorry. You look great. It was true, inevitably. 8 years before, when Eve had busted Mavis for petty theft, she'd looked great. A silk swirling street urchin with quick fingers and a brilliant smile. In the intervening years, they'd somehow become friends. For Eve, who could count on one hand the number of friends she had who weren't cops, the relationship was precious. You look tired, Mavis said, more an accusation than sympathy. And you're missing a button. Eve's fingers went automatically to her jacket, felt the loose threads. Shit. I knew it. In disgust, she shrugged out of the jacket, tossed it aside. Look, I'm sorry. I did forget. I had a lot on my mind today. Including the reason you needed my black coat? Yeah, thanks. It came in handy. Mavis sat a minute, tapping those emerald-tipped nails on the arm of the couch. Police business. Here I was, hoping you had a date. You really need to start seeing men who aren't criminals, Dallas. I saw that image consultant you fixed me up with. He wasn't a criminal. He was just an idiot. You're too picky, and that was 6 months ago. Since he'd tried to get her in the sack by offering a free lip tattoo, Eve thought it was not nearly long enough, but kept the opinion to herself. I'll go change. You don't want to go out and bump butts with the space boys. Mavis sprang up again, the shoulder-length crystals at her ears sparkling. But go ahead and get out of that ugly skirt. I'll order Chinese. Relief had Eve's shoulders sagging. For Mavis, she would have tolerated an evening at a loud, crowded, obnoxious club, peeling Randy Pilots and sex-starved Sky Station techs off her chest. The idea of eating Chinese with her feet up was like heaven. You don't mind? Mavis waved the words away as she tapped in the restaurant she wanted on the computer. I spend every night in a club. That's work, Eve called out as she went into the bedroom. You're telling me. Tongue between her teeth, Mavis perused the menu on screen. A few years ago, I'd have said singing for my supper was the world's biggest scam, the best grift I could run. Turns out I'm working harder than I ever did bilking tourists. You want egg rolls?
Sure. You're not thinking of quitting, are you?
Mavis was silent a moment as she made her choices.
No, I'm hooked on applause.
Feeling generous, she charged dinner to her world card. And since we renegotiated my contract so I get 10% of the gate, I'm a regular businesswoman.
There's nothing regular about you, Eve disagreed.
She came back in, comfortable in jeans and an NYPSD sweatshirt.
True. Got any of that wine I brought over last time?
Most of the second bottle.
Because it sounded like the best idea she'd had all day, Eve detoured into the kitchen to pour it.
So, are you still seeing the dentist?
Nope.
Idly, Mavis wandered to the entertainment unit and programmed in music. It was getting too intense. I didn't mind him falling in love with my teeth, but he decided to go for the whole package. He wanted to get married.
The bastard.
You can't trust anybody, Mavis agreed. How's the law and order business?
It's a little intense right now.
Eve glanced up from the wine she was pouring when the buzzer sounded.
That can't be dinner already.
Even as she said it, she heard Mavis clipping cheerfully toward the door in her 5-inch spikes.
Check the security screen, she said quickly, and was halfway to the door herself when Mavis pulled it open.
She had one moment to curse, another to reach for the weapon she wasn't wearing. Then Mavis's quick, flirtatious laugh had her adrenaline draining again. Eve recognized the uniform of the delivery company, saw nothing but embarrassed pleasure in the young, fresh face of the boy who handed the package to Mavis.
I just love presents, Mavis said with a flutter of her silver-tipped lashes as the boy backed away, blushing.
Don't you come with it.
Leave the kid alone.
With a shake of her head, Eve took the package from Mavis and closed the door again.
They're so cute at that age.
She blew a kiss at the security screen before turning to Eve.
What are you so nervous about, Dallas?
The case I'm working on has me jumpy, I guess. She eyed the gold foil and elaborate bow on the package she held with more suspicion than pleasure.
I don't know who'd be sending me anything.
There's a card, Mavis pointed out dryly. You could always read it. There might be a clue.
Now look who's cute.
Eve tugged the card out of its gold envelope.
Rourke.
As she read over Eve's shoulder, Mavis let out a low whistle.
Not the Rourke. The incredibly wealthy, fabulous to look at, sexily mysterious Rourke, who owns approximately 28% of the world and its satellites?
All Eve felt was irritation.
He's the only one I know.
You know him! Mavis rolled her green-shadowed eyes.
Dallas, I've underestimated you unforgivably. Tell me everything. How? When? Why? Did you sleep with him? Tell me you slept with him, then give me every tiny detail.
We've had a secret, passionate affair for the last 3 years, during which time I bore him a son who's being raised on the far side of the moon by Buddhist monks.
Brows knit. Eve shook the box.
Get a grip, Mavis.
It has to do with a case, and... she added before Mavis could open her mouth. It's confidential.
Mavis didn't bother to roll her eyes again. When Eve said confidential, no amount of cajoling, pleading, or whining could budge her an inch.
Okay. But you can tell me if he looks as good in person as he does in pictures.
Better, Eve muttered.
Jesus, really?
Mavis moaned and let herself fall onto the sofa.
I think I just had an orgasm.
You ought to know. Eve set the package down, scowled at it.
And how did he know where I live?
You can't pluck a cop's address out of the directory file.
How did he know? She repeated quietly. And what's he up to? For God's sake, Dallas, open it. He probably took a shine to you. Some men find the cool, disinterested, and understated attractive. Makes them think you're deep.
I bet it's diamonds, Mavis said, pouncing on the box as her patience snapped.
A necklace, a diamond necklace, maybe rubies. You'd look sensational in rubies.
She ripped ruthlessly through the pricey paper, tossed aside the lid of the box, and plunged her hand through the gold-edged tissue. What the hell is this?
But Eve had already scented it, already, despite herself, begun to smile. It's coffee, she murmured, unaware of the way her voice softened as she reached for the simple brown bag Mavis held.
Coffee?
Illusions shattered, Mavis stared.
The man's got more money than God, and he sends you a bag of coffee?
Real coffee. Oh, well, then. In disgust, Mavis waved a hand.
I don't care what the damn stuff costs a pound, Alice. A woman wants glitter.
Eve brought the bag to her face and sniffed deep. Not this woman. The son of a bitch knew just how to get to me. She sighed. In more ways than one.
Eve treated herself to one precious cup the next morning. Even her temperamental auto chef hadn't been able to spoil the dark, rich flavor. She drove to the station with her faulty heater under sleeting skies in a wind chill that came in just under 5 degrees with a smile on her face. It was still there when she walked into her office and found Feeney waiting for her.
Well, well, he studied her. What do you have for breakfast, Ace?
Nothing but coffee. Just coffee. Got anything for me?
Ran a full check on Richard de Blas, Elizabeth Barrister, and the rest of the clan.
He handed her a disc marked Code 5 in bold red.
No real surprises. Nothing much out of the ordinary on Rockman, either. In his 20s, he belonged to a paramilitary group known as SafeNet.
SafeNet? Eve repeated, brow wrinkling.
You'd have been about 8 when it was disbanded, kid, Feeney told her with a smirk. Should have heard of it in your history lessons.
Rings a distant bell.
Was that one of the groups that got worked up when we had that skirmish with China?
It was, and if they'd had their way, it would have been a lot more than a skirmish. A disagreement over international space could have gotten ugly.
But the diplomats managed to fight that war before they could. Few years later, they were disbanded, though there are rumors on and off about a faction of SafeNet going underground.
I've heard of them. Still hear about them.
You think Rockman's involved with a fanatic splinter group like that?
It only took Feeney a moment to shake his head. I think he watches his step. Power reflects power, and de Blas has plenty. If he ever gets into the White House, Rockman would be right beside him.
Please! Eve pressed a hand to her stomach. You'll give me nightmares.
It's a long shot, but he's got some backing for the next election.
Feeney moved his shoulders.
Rockman's alibied, anyway, by de Blas. They were in East Washington.
She sat. Anything else?
Charles Monroe. He's had an interesting life. Nothing shady that shows. I'm working on the victim's logs. You know, sometimes if you're careless in altering files, you leave shadows floating. Seems to me somebody just kills a woman could get careless.
You find a shadow, Feeney. Clear away the gray, and I'll buy you a case of that lousy whiskey you like.
Deal.
I'm still working on Rourke, he added.
There's a guy who isn't careless. Every time I think I've gotten over one wall of security, I hit another. Whatever data there is on him is well guarded.
Keep scaling those walls. I'll try digging under them.
When Feeney left, Eve shifted to her terminal. She hadn't wanted to check in front of Mavis, and preferred, in this case, using her office unit. The question was simple. Eve entered the name and address of her apartment complex. Asked, owner? And so the answer was simple. Rourke. Lola Starr's license for sex was only 3 months old. She'd applied for it on her 18th birthday, the earliest possible date. She liked to tell her friends she'd been an amateur until then. It was the same day she'd left her home in Toledo, the same day she'd changed her name from Alice Williams. Both home and name had been far too boring for Lola. She had a cute pixie face. She'd nagged and begged and wept until her parents had agreed to buy her a more pointed chin and a tip-tilted nose for her 16th birthday. Lola had wanted to look like a sexy elf, and thought she'd succeeded. Her hair was coal black, cut in short, sassy spikes. Her skin was milk white and firm. She was saving for enough money to have her eyes changed from brown to emerald green, which she thought would suit her image better. But she'd been lucky enough to have been born with a lush little body that needed no more than basic maintenance. She'd wanted to be a licensed companion all her life. Other girls might have dreamed of careers in law or finance, studied their way into medicine or industry, but Lola had always known she was born for sex. And why not make a living from what you did best? She wanted to be rich and desired and pampered. The desire part she found easy. Men, particularly older men, were willing to pay well for someone with Lola's attributes. But the expenses of her profession were more stringent than she'd anticipated when she dreamed away in her pretty room in Toledo. The licensing fees, the mandatory health exams, the rent, and sin tax all ate into profits. Once she'd finished paying for her training, she'd only had enough left to afford a small one-room apartment at the ragged edges of Prostitute Walk. Still, it was better than working the streets, as many still did, and Lola had plans for bigger and better things. One day she'd live in a penthouse and take only the cream of clients. She'd be wined and dined in the best restaurants, jetted to exotic places to entertain royalty and wealth. She was good enough, and she didn't intend to stay at the bottom of the ladder for long. The tips helped. A professional wasn't supposed to accept cash or credit bonuses, not technically, but everyone did. She was still girl enough to prefer the pretty little gifts some of her clients offered, but she banked the money religiously and dreamed of her penthouse. Tonight, she was going to entertain a new client, one who had requested she call him Daddy. She'd agreed, and had waited until the arrangements were made before she allowed herself a smirk. The guy probably thought he was the first one to want her to be his little girl. The fact was, after only a few short months on the job, pedophilia was rapidly becoming her specialty. So she'd sit on his lap, let him spank her, while telling her solemnly that she needed to be punished. Really, it was like playing a game, and most of the men were kind of sweet. With that in mind, she chose a flirty skirted dress with a scalloped white collar. Beneath, she wore nothing but white stockings. She'd removed her pubic hair and was as bare and smooth as a 10-year-old. After studying the reflection, she added a bit more color to her cheeks and clear gloss to her pouty lips. At the knock on the door, she grinned, and her young and still guileless face grinned back in the mirror. She couldn't yet afford video security and used the Judas hole to check her visitor. He was handsome, which pleased her, and, she assumed, old enough to be your father, which would please him. She opened the door, aimed a shy, coy smile. "Hi, Daddy." He didn't want to waste time. It was the one asset he had little of at the moment. He smiled at her. For a whore, she was a pretty little thing. When the door was shut at his back, he reached under her skirt and was pleased to find her naked. It would speed matters along if he could become aroused quickly. "Daddy!" Playing her part, Lola let out a shrieking giggle. "That's naughty!" "I've heard you've been naughty." He removed his coat and set it neatly aside while she pouted at him. Though he'd taken the precaution of clear sealing his hands, he would touch nothing in the room but her. "I've been good, Daddy. Very good." "You've been naughty, little girl." From his pocket, he took a small video camera, which he set up, aimed towards the narrow bed she'd piled with pillows and stuffed animals. "Are you gonna take pictures?" "That's right." She'd have to tell him that would cost him extra, but decided to wait until the deed was done. Clients didn't care to have their fantasies broken with reality. She'd learned that in training. "Go lie down on the bed." "Yes, Daddy." She lay among the pillows and grinning animals. "I've heard you've been touching yourself." "No, Daddy." "It isn't good to tell lies to your daddy.
I have to punish you, and then I'll kiss it and make it better. When she smiled, he walked to the bed. Lift your skirt, little girl, and show me how you touched yourself. Lola didn't care for this part. She liked being touched, but the feel of her own hands brought her little excitement. Still, she lifted her skirt, stroked herself, keeping her movements shy and hesitant, as she expected he wanted. It excited him, the glide of her small fingers. After all, that was what a woman was made for, to use herself, to use the men who wanted her. How does it feel?
Soft, she murmured. You touch, Daddy. Feel how soft.
He laid a hand over hers, felt himself harden satisfactorily as he slipped a finger inside her. It would be quick for both of them. Unbutton your dress, he ordered, and continued to manipulate her as she opened it from its prim collar down. Turn over. When she did, he brought his hand down on her pert bottom in smart slaps that reddened the creamy flesh while she whimpered in programmed response. It didn't matter if he hurt her or not. She'd sold herself to him. That's a good girl. He was fully erect now, beginning to throb. Still, his movements were careful and precise as he undressed. Naked, he straddled her, slipped his hands beneath her so that he could squeeze her breasts. So young, he thought, and let himself shudder from the pleasure of flesh that had yet to need refining. Daddy's going to show you how he rewards good girls. He wanted her to take him into her mouth, but couldn't risk it. The birth control her file listed she used would eradicate his sperm vaginally, but not orally. Instead, he vaulted up her hips, taking the time to stroke his hands over that firm young flesh as he drove himself into her. He was rougher than either of them expected. After that first violent thrust, he held himself back. He had no wish to hurt her to the point where she would cry out. Though in a place such as this, he doubted anyone would notice or care. Still, she was rather charmingly unskilled and naive. He settled on a slower, more gentle rhythm, which he discovered drew out his own pleasure. She moved well, meeting him, matching him. Unless he was very mistaken, not all her groans and cries were simulated. He felt her tense, shudder, and he smiled, pleased that he'd been able to bring a whore to a genuine climax. He closed his eyes and let himself come. She sighed and cuddled into one of the pillows. It had been good. Much, much better than she'd expected, and she hoped she'd found another regular.
Was I a good girl, Daddy?
A very, very good girl.
But we're not done. Roll over.
As she shifted, he rose and moved out of camera range.
Are we going to watch the video, Daddy?
He only shook his head. Remembering her role, she pouted.
I like videos. We can watch, and then you can show me how to be a good girl again.
She smiled at him, hoping for a bonus.
I could touch you this time. I'd like to touch you.
He smiled and took the SIG 210 with a silencer out of his coat pocket. He watched her blink in curiosity as he aimed the gun.
What's that? Is it a toy for me to play with?
He shot her in the head first, the weapon barely making more than a pop as she jerked back. Coolly, he shot again, between those young, firm breasts, and last, as the silencer eroded, into her smooth, bare pubis. Switching the camera off, he arranged her carefully among the blood-soaked pillows and soiled, smiling animals while she stared up at him in wide-eyed surprise.
It was no life for a young girl.
He told her gently, then went back to the camera to record the last scene. Chapter 5. All Eve wanted was a candy bar. She'd spent most of the day testifying in court, and her lunch break had been eaten up by a call from a snitch that had cost her $50 and gained her a slim lead on a smuggling case that had resulted in two homicides, which she'd been beating her head against for 2 months.
All she wanted was a quick hit of sugar substitute before she headed home to prep for her 7 o'clock meeting with Rourke. She could have zipped through any number of